recession, inflation, stagnation, all of these words that we hear bombarded with in our news in the last few weeks. Dan, we're going to talk about money and finances today.
Now you need that money, money, money.
Money, 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 money. Yeah. Yeah, so you know, we decide to have a conversation. You know, whenever churches talk about money, it's 90% of the time it's like, give some to the church.
Yeah.
And so we just want everyone to know this is not going to be a tithing-centric conversation. No. But, you know, it's interesting, Dan, whenever the economy is in a bull market, when, you know, the stock market is exploding, wages are rising, the people are hiring, man, it just, everyone feels good, everyone's excited. I mean, we live in one of the most freest capitalistic nations in the world, so people are starting businesses and all kinds mm-hmm. of fun stuff. But then every once in a while, and this is just the cycle of all economies, there's dips, there's bear markets, and it's when that happens, people start freaking out a little bit.
Yeah.
And so help us understand, you know, just the, we want to talk about estate planning, we want to talk about day-to-day money management, because we need the word of God to shape us in this area as much as anything else.
Yeah, and this is kind of, I mean, I chose this topic for us to discuss today because it's personal with me right now for a couple of reasons. First of all, I had a heart attack a year ago.
Mm.
And so your own mortality eventually causes you to say, what am I going to leave behind?
Yeah.
Is my spouse going to be cared for if she lives longer than I do? You know, we have an adult child who's dependent upon us. Mm. How am I going to take care of them? What is the legacy I'm going to leave financially, if any at all?
Yeah.
You know, so that was part of it. The other thing that I'm facing is I'm within a decade of when most people retire.
Yeah.
You know, I'll never retire unless physically I'm not able to.
Yeah.
But generally speaking, you get to a point where you're not working full time or you have the ability to step away from a job that pays you
right.
and be able to do it for volunteers. So I'm approaching that within the next decade or so. So I ask myself, am I ready for that? Because again, nobody wants to be, you know, the 80-year-old guy who's like, is he ever going to retire?
So you and I have been on staffs where there's been people that are like,
all my life,
Pastor Joe just needs to.
Yeah. He fell asleep while he was preaching last week. and then sometimes people don't retire because they can't retire.
Yeah.
And that's a sad, sad situation. Yeah. That's a form of bondage. So, you know, I've been in the middle of planning my estate. I've just signed my will a couple of weeks ago and laid it out. I've learned a lot in the process.
Mm.
And so I thought this might make an interesting topic. But one of the things I just want to kind of point out is you ought to not wait till the very end before you set financial goals and make those. And sometimes Christians get kind of quirky about talking about money because money's the root of all kinds of evil. And money's a tool.
Yeah.
It's a tool. I pay attention to how I spend my time. I want to pay attention to how I spend my money as well.
Yeah.
And the Bible tells us that a wise man leaves money for his children and his children's children. You know, we do think about that legacy.
Yeah.
Accumulated familial wealth is a tradition that God established in the nation of Israel.
Yeah.
And it's one of the ways that, you know, families are able to grow and be successful over time. And I think that's part of God's plan and God's mission.
Yeah.
So, you know, I did not come from money. I didn't come from wealth. I come from a very blue collar background. So nobody's leaving me $1 million when they die, you know, and the same for my spouse.
Yeah.
So in other words, what we leave behind is going to be basically what we were able to prepare to leave behind. It had to be intentional. So, you know, that's kind of where I wanted to go with this conversation. What are some things that we can do and what is a biblical approach to it?
So let's talk about just the day-to-day, week-to-week. I mean, because most Americans, according to statistics, live paycheck to paycheck. They have a very micro view of their finances and not a macro view. You just said you got to think about long-term, and most people aren't, they just don't think about it. I don't have the numbers, but I remember reading a story maybe a year or two ago, and it was about how many percentage of people, what they had set aside for retirement, and it was appalling.
Yeah.
You know, nationwide.
Yeah. Oh, it's incredible.
It's really sad when you think about being part of the wealthiest nation in the history of the world.
Yeah.
And so most of us are living in the micro decisions of finance. So help us understand, how do you transition from having that micro mindset of just kind of getting through the bills, paying everything, to having the macro long-term view of estate planning and just that those kinds of things.
So there's two operative words on this. One is a plan, and number two is discipline.
Mm.
If you don't have those two things, it's never going to happen.
Yeah.
So to me, and we mentioned tithing a little bit at the beginning,
yeah.
but for me, both the plan and the discipline started with tithing.
Yeah.
So my mom used to give me my allowance, first of all, in nickels, so that it was easy if I got 50 cents that my tithe was one nickel and it went in the offering plate. Now, I'm not going to get into the whole debate, which I believe is very, very clear. Even in the New Testament, for the believer, the tithe is the beginning.
Yeah.
It's not the end, nor is it really optional in terms of simply following the patterns that God set for us. God also gave us the Ten Commandments. Those aren't optional,
right.
even if you're a believer as well, even though we're no longer condemned under the law. So I believe that the person who tithes takes that first step in having both a plan and in exercising discipline. So for me, it's always been easy because I've done it since I was a kid.
Yeah.
And I would urge parents to teach their kids that as well. In other words, give away 10% of what you get, no matter what. So my first job out of college, I was a Christian school teacher. I was on a 40-some-odd week contract, and I got paid $9,200. Now, even in those days, it was $5 an hour.
Wow.
So that was low pay to be a college graduate and to be able to support yourself. Mm. My wife and I, our first year of marriage, we made $20,000.
Mm.
That's what we lived on. Mm. And even in 1984, that wasn't much money. But even in those days, we always tithed.
Yeah.
Because what you do is you exercise. The plan was the first 10% always goes to the Lord.
Yeah, we don't think about it.
And by the way, we've always practiced. I still practice. I tithe on my gross, not on my net. And here's why. Because it's the principle of first fruits. Mm. The taxes are not my first fruit.
Yeah.
The tithe is, and then the taxes come out, and then the bills and so forth.
My dad always said, "Do you want gross blessings or net blessings?"
Yeah.
That's what he said to me. So, he's like, if you want to, you know, it just depends on what kind of blessings you want from God. So,
and my mindset was, well, it was never mine to begin with.
Right.
You know, the 90% is a gift from God. Yeah. The 10% was always His. And so by living by that discipline, it was helpful. The second thing, my grandfather taught me this, and he said, "Dan, always save 10%." Save 10% in such a way that you never see it. Mm. Now, for my grandfather, he bought savings bonds. They don't even sell savings bonds anymore. But he bought savings bonds. But for me, I've always put 10% aside up front. And so I find that I only have 80%, but I don't see it. It comes out in advance.
Yeah.
So when I look at my paycheck, I have to live on this 80%, which and whatever taxes that didn't take.
Yeah.
So now I'm down to about 60%.
Yes.
But that 60% becomes the real money that I have, the real value of my efforts that are playing out. And therefore, you exercise discipline to live under those constraints.
Mm.
But you also, because of the 10% that you're saving, you have a plan. Get 6 months in reserve and then put it in retirement.
Mm.
A lot of people think that Social Security is supposed to be your retirement plan. It was never the intention that Social Security would be your retirement plan. It was a supplement to your retirement plan.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're not saving for retirement in addition, and retirement in the way the Social Security system is set up also covers, you know, your health care after you're 65.
Right.
And these other things. But what it doesn't do, it doesn't pass on to your family.
Right.
It's gone. When you die, it's gone.
Plus, we all know that if you're depending on Social Security, you know, one or two bad years of inflation make that money that you think you're getting, it just decreases in value
it's
incredibly.
Killing. You know, my mother is on the equivalent of Social Security railroad retirement. And, you know, every year she has to tighten her belt a little bit more as it relates to the income coming from that because of inflation. It doesn't keep up with inflation.
Right.
So you take that remaining money, that 60, 50% of your gross pay after tithe, after savings, after taxes. And that is what you use to plan how you're going to live. And you have a plan. So most people will say you shouldn't spend more than 25% of your pay
on a
mortgage payment or a rent payment.
Right.
And they'll say, yeah, you can go up to 40%. But my belief is that difference between 25 and 40% is your utilities, your taxes, your when the roof needs to be replaced, your air conditioning unit goes out. You use that 15% that are also related to your housing.
Yeah.
But those are the expenses that come up as a result.
Yeah.
So never go more than 40% what you're spending for your utilities, your taxes, your total living expenses.
Yeah.
So of that 40% of what remains, you realize, again, you've already paid your taxes out of that, your income taxes. You've paid your savings or retirement, and you've taken your tithe out.
Yeah.
So that means that when you figure out, well, what is 25%? Well, you know, if you're making $4,000 after all that is taken out per month, then you know that, okay, $1,000 a month is what I have to spend on housing, my rent payment. So, well, that's not going to get you much these days, right?
So find a roommate.
Yeah. You may have to find a roommate if you're single. If you're not single, you may be living in a mobile home for a while.
Yeah.
You may be living in a two-bedroom apartment and you have a couple of kids.
Well, you know, you mentioned this is one of the things that I think we need to say, and maybe it's I don't know if it's a younger generation thing, but I find the younger generation is not willing to
wait
for those. You know, it's almost like they want the job of their dreams, the home of their dreams, everything of
new
their
car,
dreams in their
car.
20s and 30s. Yeah. And I'm thinking, you know, when my wife and I got married, it was kind of like, yeah, you just resign yourself that, yeah, we're not going to have the best of it right now, you know? Yeah. And you know, Liz and I made a ton of foolish decisions until we met Dave Ramsey. Mm-hmm. Not literally, but you know, we got that total money makeover about 20, maybe not 20 years ago, maybe 15 years ago. And we just read it and we're like, this is what we need to be doing. Mm-hmm. And so,
which is part of the planning.
But that's part of the, like, you just gave out very detailed plans. And if you don't know what to do, if Dan just spouted off stuff to you and it sounded like Greek to you, you need someone, whether it's Crown Financial or Total Money, Financial Peace, whatever it is.
Yeah.
If you,
Rich Dad, Poor Dad.
If you don't know what to do, you need someone to tell you what to do.
I think you need that anyway.
Yeah.
Because most of us are not financial planners. So when it comes to my savings, I don't manage my own retirement. I don't manage my own savings account.
Yeah.
I hire somebody to do that because, you know, I'm a pretty well-educated dude, but I don't spend a full time amount looking at that. And if I did, it would distract from other important things.
That's right.
So I think it's a good idea to get a reasonable financial advisor to help you with that. It's like going to a doctor. They help you make better, wiser decisions. It's about your stewardship of your health.
Yeah.
One of the things that I also like to point out is beyond the patience and the plan, know your priorities. Okay, for my wife and I, we had priorities. One of the priorities was that she would raise the children at home, and that I didn't want to be dependent upon her work.
Mm.
Now, we didn't accomplish that goal immediately. We had to ease into it.
Yeah.
So when my son was born, she was still working full time. Then she went part time. And then by the time my daughter was born, she was able to stay at home.
Mm.
In order to accomplish that, there's only two things you can do. Reduce your expenses or you can increase your income.
Mm.
For us, the only way we could do it, because we were in ministry, is for me to increase my income. And the way I've increased my income is I've always worked a second job.
Mm.
Always. My entire adult life, I've worked a second job. Now, there's two reasons for that. Number one, being in ministry, there's a limit. We always point to that one, you know, the guy who's wearing the Yeezys. Tennis shoes, you know, and they're, those guys are 0.1% and they get all the press.
Yeah.
The typical person in ministry is not getting rich and they're sacrificing to be able to get it. And you know, there was no retirement plan where I worked until I was 40.
Right.
So, you know, you have to understand that reality. But for me, I don't play golf. I don't watch TV. I don't do a lot of things I watch some TV. That's not true. But I don't do a lot of things that other people do because I have a priority. My plan and my priority said, okay, you know, for years I sold stuff on eBay.
Yeah.
I sold postcards on eBay and made $1,000 a month.
Yeah.
And I've been a professor online for 15 years.
Mm.
So 16. So these things allowed me to have the income to be able to do what I wanted to do to meet my financial goals so that I could still remain in ministry and take care of my kids and my family in a way that I wanted to. I could have lived lesser.
Mm.
I chose to do this. You may not choose that. You may say, okay, we are going to live in a 1,500 square foot house. I didn't.
Mm.
I made that choice. For us, I've owned one. I'm 61 years old. I have purchased one new car in my life. It was a Saturn, and it cost, I think, $10,000. So it was not much of a new car. But so I choose not to drive, for instance, my money.
Yeah.
And not everybody feels that way. That's just me.
Right.
However, I like to take nice vacations.
Mm.
So, you know, for me, I'd rather my wife and I go on a cruise once a year than to drive a new car.
Yeah.
So I have to choose between the two so they reflect my priorities. Yeah. I rather have experiences than things.
Yeah.
So, but if you don't sit down and have these conversations and work through them, what you'll do is you'll put it on credit cards.
Yeah, which we know is exploding right now.
Yeah, particularly during times of recession.
We talked about this plan and this priority, because I know someone listening to this is going to be like, how important is it to have these conversations with your spouse? Because I think one of the biggest problems I have heard and seen in most marriages is, you know, the finances is a big issue. And you need to be you need to have the same plan and have the same priorities if it's going to work.
Yeah, you've got to have these hard conversations. And you've got to agree, generally speaking, in most families, one person is more financially astute than the other.
Yeah.
When I was growing up, it was my mom. Mm. In my home, it is me.
Mm.
So I get my wife involved, but quite frankly, she's just not as interested in it as I am.
Yeah.
I also, being a type A kind of guy I am, I'm thinking, like, does she have enough? Like, I feel this pressure as the head of the home, and I do believe that the man ought to function in that role. If something happens to me, is she going to be taken care of?
Right.
When we had kids, are the kids going to be taken care of living at home? So all of these things were important to me, and I needed to have them in order to be able to sleep at night.
Yeah.
So, yeah, but if you're a guy and you're just, you know, money is not your thing, but your wife's a CPA, then let her handle it. Let her handle it. Don't be a jerk.
Yeah.
God puts differences in our marriages but you need to know. Like, after I had my heart attack, I put together a big folder. I said, okay, here are all the accounts. Here's the insurance policies. Here's the passwords. I typed them all out, and they're all right. And here's where I'm keeping the book. And here's a copy of the will in the book. And, you know, I sat down, went over it with Julie, showed her how to do all these things. She cried. You know, she had one thing. That's nice that she doesn't want me to die.
Yeah.
But you have to have those conversations. They're really important. Yeah. The one thing I want to make sure we hit, because we're running out of time, though, is the legacy aspect of it. In the process of planning my estate, I discovered, and this was very important to me, I wanted to leave something beyond me.
Hmm.
I wanted to leave something. You know, the average person who gets an inheritance, 80% of the people spend it all within 1 year.
Are you kidding me?
They spend it all within 1 year.
Wow.
Now, a lot of times they'll go out and they'll buy a new car, a boat, and this, or they'll go put it on a house, but it's gone.
Hmm.
And the other thing is, over the years, as I've put money in investments in my retirement, it has increased in value.
Mm.
I've not tithed off of that. Every year I don't figure it out. I don't even know how to figure that out. So I made a deal in my own will, in my estate, that the moment Julie and I both die, our estate gets totaled up, and the first 20% of that goes into what we're forming a family charitable trust.
Mm.
And so 20% of that estate goes into it. Now, if you own your own house, if you have a modest life insurance policy, and if you have a retirement plan outside of Social Security, that can easily total up to be nearly $1 million.
Mm.
And if you take out 20% of that, that's a couple $100,000.
Wow. Yeah.
In the Lord's work, that can go a long way.
Yeah.
And the way we've set it up is we've set it up into a perpetual fund where it'll have a manager, and 5% of that year gets put in per year. Any years it goes over, it increases that amount. And we've got a plan with it. But here's what else I also discovered on this, that I could take what I was going to, the rest of my estate, after I paid all my bills and so forth, take the rest of my estate, and I put it in a family trust. It's invested.
Mm-hmm.
And each of my kids get an equal portion of that for 20 years.
Hmm.
And at the end of 20 years, they will get substantially more, or over 20 years, they'll get substantially more than if I gave it all to them up front.
Hmm.
But each year, they'll get a really significant amount, enough to make a house payment, but they won't get it all at once. Because most 25 or 26-year-old kids, and that's very likely, you know, that some kids end up with their inheritance, are not ready to spend that kind of money.
Yeah.
Maybe they need to use it toward retirement. But you'll probably spend it wiser when you're older than when you're younger.
That's right.
But here's the cool thing. During the course of those 20 years, that fund will increase almost double.
Wow.
And at the end of that 20 years, after my kids have gotten more than they would have gotten if I gave it to them all in a sum, all that money goes into my charitable trust.
Mm.
So now, instead of a couple hundred thousand dollars, it's now worth over $1 million.
Wow.
And I'm having my kids have a say to make sure that the things that were important to me in my life will still continue to be addressed after my life is over.
Yeah.
And it'll keep them together. So my church will be blessed. My ministry in Cuba will be blessed. Kids being able to go to college to go into ministry will be blessed. Mm. All these things will be doing. And when they get together, decide how the distribution is going to go out, they're going to remember these were dad's priorities.
That's right.
And these were part of the family legacy. Hopefully, what I'd like to see them do is do the same thing and make it a perpetual trust
that passes
generations.
Yeah.
Your attorney can help you set that up. Mm. It'll be a blessing to the Lord's work. It gives testimony to that. And also, your family still gets blessed and honored, and there's no taxes, no estate taxes to pay when you do it this way. So there's these advantages. And stop and think, you know, if you're in a church that has an annual budget of X number of dollars and you're able to continue to give to that, what a blessing that is.
Oh,
to that
that'd
church.
Be unbelievable.
To missionaries, to people going into the ministry to be able to have someone pay off their college debt. So there's so many cool ways to invest, and there's a great joy in that, and it was the Lord's money all along.
Yeah. Man, a lot of great things that you gave us to think about. And, you know, Dan, I just think that so few of us, when we're in the middle of, like I said in the beginning, we're so caught up in the micro that we're not thinking about the macro. But you cast a vision for us that, man, I just hope everyone listening to this, whether you are young or older, to ask yourself, what is it going to take for us to have the kind of legacy that you just described? A financial legacy that's going to multiply the impact of the kingdom through the resources God's given to me. And so I hope that you were challenged in this conversation. I hope that you as you've listened, that just gives you something to think about and to contemplate and have conversations with your spouse. Do you have a plan? What are your priorities? Do you have the discipline to follow through with that plan? And when we do, may God, whatever he's given to us, may it be multiplied to impact the kingdom of God. Thank you so much for joining us in this conversation on Life Talks. We'll talk to you next time.
You've been listening to Life Talks. Be sure to hit the subscribe button so you never miss a new episode. Share this podcast on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter to let your friends and family know about Life Talks. We'd love to hear from you as well, so leave a comment and let us know your thoughts on this episode or any other topics we've discussed. Life Talks is a ministry of Life Fellowship in Cornelius, North Carolina. For more information on Life Talks or Life Fellowship, visit lifecharlotte.com, or you can find us on Facebook at Life Fellowship Charlotte.